radioalburn.com.
Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush, you vocal, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I've heard orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be. In the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One word more for signal token, whistle up the marching tune. For your pike upon your shoulder, by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon. With your pike upon your...
Greetings from the Northwest homeland, comrades. The date is Thursday, November 14th, 2019. I'm Andy Donner, and you're listening to Radio Free Northwest. Comrades, this being the first RFN in some time, it was my intention to give you a brief look into some of the things we've been up to with the altered schedule. Unfortunately, that didn't work out for me this week. I suffered a number of critical computer failures, and thankfully the rest of the HQ group and several others of you out there have been hard at work, and there is content for this episode. There were also a couple of serious subjects I wanted to get into on this episode in particular, but clearly that isn't going to happen. Despite all that, there are two things I must profusely thank you all for. Since our announcement that we were altering RFN's schedule and some of our admonishments that certain things like financial support and RFN items be contributed, you have all responded, and quite well. You have no idea how appreciative we are, and I want to reemphasize that we don't live on these donations. This stuff goes directly to helping the party, and it's a big deal that you all took care of business. Many have sent in RFN submissions, and we're busy processing those. Thank you all very much. I also want to say how much we genuinely do appreciate the fact that the financial support picked up to a reasonable level. Now again, thank every single one of you for contributing. Don't feel as though you have to send in huge amounts, though. We won't say no, but the fact of the matter is we do not expect you to kill yourselves to make these donations. $10 a month is the minimum suggestion. You can send less, or you can send more. We would prefer, however, to get a few dollars every month from as many people as we can, simply because we don't want to be a burden on you, as many of you are currently saving up for migration and attempting migration proper. Even so, don't let that detract from how important it is that you're supporting the racial cause. The Northwest Imperative, as expressed in the Butler Plan, is the single solitary thing we have left as a race, and never think that your contribution is too small to matter. It's not. The subject of donations and contributions is an interesting one. Harold was always very good about acknowledging the receipt of funds, and we are woefully lacking in that department. This is not because we're only interested in you for your financial support, again, far from it. There are things you can do that are far more important than the financial support. Even so, several of you have rightly asked us to acknowledge when we receive your donations. Harold made his living by carefully crafting a long list of supporters and maintaining their interest. And he was perfectly right to do so. Bear one thing in mind, though. Because he was responsible for accumulating that list himself, the imperfect methods by which he kept it allowed him to at least maintain an understanding of who was on it, when they got a hold of him first, how long they'd been around, so on and so forth, as well as information about their actual identities, their actual mailing addresses, and their actual email addresses. True, we have that information, but it's not in a form appropriate for the way we operate right now. The reason we're having a hard time acknowledging individual donations is because that information would have to be shared, and it has to be shared in particular ways that guarantee it can't be hacked. I think you see where I'm going with this, and Well, I certainly hope you do anyway, because I have to be circumspect about describing the problem any further. I want to make it plain, though, we understand you're not asking for these acknowledgments out of some sense of vanity that you need to be validated in what you're doing, rather you're asking because you genuinely care whether or not we're getting them. In the next couple of weeks, I'm going to make an effort to get a hold of everyone that supported us before, during, and after that announcement about our RFN schedule changing, and I want to make it plain I'm going to do my best to do that by paper mail. I would have done all of this sooner, but as mentioned, my schedule and my technical capabilities have been severely hindered in the last month. That should be coming to an end by the time you hear this, and in the long run, we'll get this sorted the way we need to. I do want to make one further comment about this, and then I'll stop boring you so you can get on with the actual show. I mentioned that it was particularly upsetting when Comrade Don Welke passed, and that was so because he was working on a long-term solution for managing securely, safely, and respectfully all of the information we have about all of you. Unfortunately, some of that work died with him, and we're still busy picking up the pieces. There are organizational and structural things we have to deal with to go forward correctly in a professional way, befitting the necessity of the Northwest Imperative. Even so, I don't want you to feel forgotten. We appreciate those of you that support us, and we're going to make sure we show that appreciation appropriately. Thank you all, and I'll see you next time.
Good evening, comrades. Tonight I'm going to be discussing Plagues of the Mind by Bruce S. Thornton. This author, generally speaking, wants to encourage critical thinking. Thornton discusses how media may affect concerns by highlighting some things and downplaying others. Thornton, unlike Taleb and the late Harold, would really rather focus exclusively on ideas rather than personalities or characters. The author wants to tackle certain popular conceptions, like whether anti-drug programs actually work, or if they only encourage greater interest in drugs, or if repressed memories actually affect behavior. The author takes on popular psychology by asking the question, does self-esteem, to the degree that we can measure it, really equal success, especially when all the evidence is for the inverse? But now we come to the crux of the book. The author talks about how today many people want therapy. They hope to accomplish this either by realizing that they are a victim of some kind or that they sympathize with victims of some kind. In their desire for emotional validation, in a society that is no longer especially religious, they look to nature, which supposedly reflects notions of diversity and unspoiled non-judgment. Many Westerners come to an idealization of pre-contact natives of various kinds, who are imagined to be selfless caretakers of the earth and who believed in ecology and feminism. The author is concerned that no account is taken for the cruelty of nature or for the actual lives of these various pre-contact natives. This author is writing primarily for an American audience. In this case, the author talks about the idealization of the American Indian and their culture. The author does note, however, that this concept of nature in general, they're the battle cry of the left or the right, and indeed the author does note that the National Socialists were among the very first environmentalists. Now, it is noteworthy that this book is essentially written by a mainstream classical liberal. This, again, is a book that is primarily aimed at Americans. The author is very concerned with this obsession that many Westerners, and particularly Americans, have with this notion of the Golden Age as represented by the American Indian. Thornton notes that American Indians had low population densities, and in general, they were able to have very little impact on the environment, although there were a few exceptions to this, and the author mentions Plains Indians and how they were able to change their environment through a lot of controlled burns, and also through the introduction of the horse, which really brought about Plains Indian culture, because the author does note that the horse is not originally native to the Americas. The author also talks about how the notion of conservation, at least in the way that we think of it today, was not present back at the time that the American Indians were controlling large swathes of land across this continent. Indeed, concepts of ecology and conservation were not known to the colonists or the settlers either. And the author notes that this is a very modern notion that has come about in the West in more recent times, in much more recent times. The American Indians believed, for example, that new animals came from the spirits of deceased animals. They also, again, just lived at a time when the notion of ecology really had no meaning. But Thornton does notice the fact that the Iroquois League did act effectively to curtail warfare amongst the American Indians. But the author also notes that the Iroquois League is often credited with the development of democracy. The author wants to make clear that democracy is a Western invention. Thornton is also very concerned about academics, who will often convince themselves that back in pre-agricultural Europe and the Mideast, they convinced themselves that there was a lot of goddess worship. And the author talks about how they take very scant or non-existent evidence, or even things that could be seen as non-evidence, and they try to make it fit their theory. And the author talks about how this, again, is therapeutic self-validation. The author says that if we're looking for equality, opportunity, and democracy, and we want to be informed voters, then we should look to Western culture for all of these things, because all of these things ultimately stem from the West. While this book was in the Vilke collection, it definitely seems to contradict certain hardcore movement beliefs. For example, those beliefs and interests that were held by Savitri Devi and her book, The Impeachment of Man. The author, who again is mainstream, also notes that this notion of mass genocide could actually be seen as a boon to the earth if one is a deep ecologist, because deep ecology has everything to do with lessening the impact of population and resource use. Of course, I would encourage interested listeners to read The Impeachment of Man, and in that they would see a very great contradiction to the arguments of this book. Getting back to this particular text, I wonder if this author doesn't put too much weight on this notion of a golden age. And I ask myself if most people are really driven by a golden age myth in their daily life, or if most people are more influenced by immediate demographic and socioeconomic factors. I'm not sure if Vilke ever read this book. It's possible that he didn't, as this book was delivered to me in pristine condition. However, if he did read it, he may have confused the defense of the West, that is, the defense of classical libertinism, with the actual defense of Europe. And this is something that the French identitarians are very keen to point out. At times when I meditate on this notion of going back to nature and going back to basics, I wonder if a back-to-nature hippie has more hope of coming to the new order than a rich person who is very entrenched in their comfort. And this is not necessarily due to a belief regarding a Golden Age mythos, but it's just simply the notion that someone who has a lot to lose is frequently less likely to sacrifice and make a psychic leap than someone who really has nothing to lose. And I often think about this notion of the rich man who has difficulty getting into heaven, or I think about what Hitler said about communists versus the bourgeois, and how Hitler said that a communist would have more chance of coming to National Socialism than a person who is bourgeois and primarily concerned with their money and their comforts. So when I read this book, I think it is a book that might appeal to those at the very beginning stages of going down the rabbit hole. But I tend to think that for someone more advanced, this book may be contradictory to more advanced notions of a certain back to basics renunciation. Again, this is a book called Plagues of the Mind by Bruce S. Thornton. I hope you found this review formative and interesting, and have a good evening, and hail victory, comrades.
They say can't be done. We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm westbound just like a bandit run. If you put hard on the pedal, some hell my mind it breaks. Let it all hang out, cause we gotta run to make.
Greetings, comrades. This is the trucker coming at you from Wisconsin. I probably should have gone and submitted some segments from the road here earlier, but I just got lazy and stuff. But one thing I have not been lazy about, not been slacking off on, is my monthly donation. When my check comes in, first thing comes out is my monthly donation, and then I figure out how to take care of the rest of this stuff out of the money I've got left. I'm not really sure what all you are thinking about. You really should be, you know, like Andy has been saying, fuck up and make your donation. It's one of those, I was sorry to hear Mr. Covington had passed away and stuff, but that did not stop me from listening, and that did not stop me from making my donation every month. I know how important this is and stuff, and it's not $5 or $10 a month, but I put in more than that. So anyway, there's a lot of other things I could go and do with my money. Just found out here earlier this week that them communist little bastards over there at Microsoft are decided to go and not support Windows 7 come the end of the year, beginning of next year, so I need to go and get me a new laptop and stuff, or a newer one. I don't buy brand new ones. My laptop of preference, the only thing that I found that stands up here in the bouncing and thundering down the road, is a Panasonic Toughbook. I was picking them up for a few $100. My first one was a CF29. Then when they did away with XP, I had to go and step up to a CF30, and now I'm going to be stepping up to a CF31, which is running Windows 10, and it's going to be a few $100 more than what I paid for before, so it's one of those I'm going to be saving my nickels and dimes and not putting it on credit, but I'm not going to go and cut back on my monthly donations to go and buy a new laptop either. You know, it's going to be out of my spare change and stuff that I get it. So it's one of those, that's just the way I look at doing things. If I don't have cash to buy it, I go and save up till I do have the money to purchase whatever I'm after. And trust me, I could have bought a few more firearms and stuff with the money I've donated over the years. I'd like to get a new hot tub because mine crapped out here about a year ago. But it's one of those, well, I just go and plug along and save up my money for the stuff and do it that way. Yeah, I'll have my vices. I don't smoke, but I enjoy my microbrewery beer when I get home and stuff, so it's one of those, well, that's just the way way I end up doing it. Not saying you guys have to be quite as religious as that, but as far as the monthly donation, pick an amount, write the check, send it off, and then work the rest of your finances in and around it is my personal suggestion. Anyways, all right, well, this is the trucker signing off from a rest area here in Wisconsin. Just got done delivering to a Walmart DC here. Got to go bounce over into Minnesota and pick a load up heading toward North Dakota. So anyway, have a safe one there, comrades. And it's not the best time of year to try to make your scouting trip, or better yet, don't even try to make your migration in this kind of weather, because it's already snowing in the damned Rockies. So it's kind of ugly up there. All right, well, this is Trucker signing off. Have a good one, comrades, and hope to see you out there on the road making your scouting trip and your migration next year.
They say can be done. We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm westbound, just watch a bandit run.
Greetings, everyone. This is Comrade Jason. As Andy mentioned in his segment, we have seen a significant and welcome increase in donations to the party, and just as welcome, the return of your audio submissions to RFN. This is precisely what we were seeking and what is needed, and we thank you for it. Andy also mentioned the computer crash this week that kept him from talking about a lot of the things we've been up to the last month. Since he has not gotten to share any of that this week, I'll use my time to do at least some of that. Recently, the HQ group met for the first time with a migrant couple to the homeland who settled in North Idaho a little over a year ago, and made their way into the Seattle area to meet with the NF leadership. These folks are refugees from the madness of California, and established themselves in their new lives in the homeland, and were wanting to let us know they are ready to do their part in helping to establish other migrants in their region and coordinating party outreach there. These are excellent folks, and we are planning a trip in the next couple of months out their way to meet with them again, as well as another couple who will be moving into the same area next year. This other couple will be arriving to check on the property they've purchased and where they are building a new home, where they will begin their family in the homeland. On this same trip, we will also meet with still more migrants who have settled in the area around Coeur d'Alene and with whom we are working closely. The CDA group is also composed of younger people, both singles and couples, one of which recently had their first child in the homeland. Congratulations on that, guys. We can't have a more wonderful result than new white children born in the future homeland of our race. More good news of a different kind this week. One of our race's most despicable enemies, the Jewish Harvard professor Noel Ignatiev, died at the beginning of the week and is no longer on this earth to continue his efforts to poison our white youth against their own people. I saw a comment on a website noting that he died on the 81st anniversary of Kristallnacht. How fitting and inspirational. This creature was the Jewish Harvard professor who started the attack in American academia against quote-unquote whiteness in society, an attack intended to spill into the broader culture, and which unfortunately has and continues to this day. Like many Jewish mind poisons the Jews create to attack us, this one has seen increasingly widespread success. Whiteness is, of course, just white people being themselves and living according to our own natures, according to our own lights, something which has produced the greatest nations and civilizations the world has ever seen. So naturally, Jews want to denigrate and despoil that. It's what they do, after all. I talked about this walking, talking Jewish virus of a man, Noel Ignatiev, in the August 22nd episode of RFN, and was actually informed of his welcome demise by our comrades in Coeur d'Alene. They reported that they got together for drinks and a party to celebrate. We wish we could have joined you, comrades. Now, on to the subject of your audio submissions. As Andy said, we've had a good response there, and we have received promises of more on the way. I have a couple of your segments this time, and others waiting in the wings. The more we hear from you, the easier it is for us to put together a show, and the more frequently we can do so. This first segment comes to us from within the homeland, out in the western part of Washington. Here's Bill from Spokane.
Hey guys, it's Bill in Spokane. Greetings. All right, so there's this guy. He goes by the moniker of No White Guilt. His name is Jason Kuna. And what he's saying is, basically, A, he doesn't think there's going to be a war. I guess he just thinks it's going to be a slow descent into something between Brazil or Zimbabwe. You know, just depends on what level of shithole we get to. I think it's going to be pretty damn anti-white because, you know, they're training all these MUDs to basically blame white people for all their shortcomings. So it's going to be pretty bad. So anyways, what Jason is saying, No White Guilt, he's saying that we have an anti-white culture and morality. Like, you know, that's like the baseline is this anti-white morality. And he's saying we can't do shit until we fix this. Or he's saying that whatever we try is not going to work until we change this anti-white morality and culture to pro-white or to white positive. He refers to it as white well-being. And I think the guy's got a point there because if you look or if you think about it, let's say the balloon goes up tomorrow and this thing kicks off. I mean, like guys like 3%ers, like these hardcore Second Amendment guys who should be on our team. I mean, they'll probably try to hunt us down and kill us first because, you know, it's nice and PC. Everybody will cheer them on because they killed the evil, wicked Nazis. And he also says, conversely, you know, if the balloon doesn't go up and we just slowly descend into some, you know, South African shithole where we're completely marginalized politically and just like, you know, murdered left and right by niggers. And, you know, the police, because they're all niggers and otherwise shitskins, they don't do anything about it. They just, you know, sweep it under the rug. Or if it actually makes it to trial, then some nigger jury will just, they'll just let Leroy off because, you know, Leroy's going to say, you called him a nigger or, you know, I don't know, he did some lip reading and he could read your lips that you said nigger. So, you know, he just caved your head in with a wrench. And it's going to be a Bronx jury that just lets, which is basically a jury of niggers, just lets them off. And rest assured, not only will it be niggers on that jury, it will be stupid anti-white liberals who, you know, think this is like payback and they'll go along with what the niggers are saying to cover their own white asses. Like this is like some form of reparations. By the way, this is another thing we've lost with, you know, diversity is actual blind justice. You know, now we've got social justice, so that where they take a look at your skin color, and, you know, if you're a nigger, they let you off. And if you're a white man, you know, they throw the book at you for, you know, defending yourself. I mean, you look at what happened to guys at Charlottesville. I mean, there was a dude who got 9 years because some nigger wrapped a flagpole around some old white guy's head, and they ran in to defend this guy, and, you know, they hit this nigger a few times, and, you know, he went to the ground, and they kicked him a few times, but then they stopped, and the nigger got up and ran off like the coward that he is. But anyways, I mean, this was all on video. They were clearly defending this old white guy who this nigger just blatantly nailed him right in the head with something. I think it was a flagpole or something, and tried to drag him into a car garage. And who knows what they were going to do to him in there. And, you know, this was all caught on video. And, you know, these guys were following police orders and leaving the event. And these niggers were following them and taunting them. And then they attacked this old guy and these other white guys responded. And anyways, one of them got 9 years. And there was a couple of Proud Boys recently who just got 4 years apiece. You know, these guys are like, they're white guys who are like, one of them's married to a nigger and has like three nigglets. And another one is, I think he's married to some Punjab or something. But anyway, so basically, you know, they're Nazis, except they've married, you know, they married shitskins and had like half-breed kids. So now the only thing they can do is be Proud Boys. These guys got 4 years. Antifa started a fight with them. They took them up on it, fought them on the sidewalk, and the Antifa just got nothing. And New York State gave these Proud Boys 4 years for this, for a street fight, for defending themselves. And the point that No White Guilt is bringing up about this is that we have this anti-white morality. That's why this is happening. And basically, he's saying we cannot do a damn thing to fix this until we change this morality. So why is he wrong about this? Why is he right?
Bill's piece here is a great one because it shows other white voices out there who have arrived at the same correct conclusion about the modern moral system and highlights what has been said before here on RFN. The modern anti-racist morality that we have allowed to be put into place is the key feature of modern society blocking our access to the whites-only, racial alien-free future we deserve and can have. This is because an anti-racist morality will always, by necessity, be an anti-white morality. This is a nice bit of spaced repetition on the issue. In one of my RFN segments from some months back, I laid out my own characterization of the overall arc of decline that we have suffered in our civilization over the last 60 to 70 years. During that time, whites allowed our own Aryan sense of morality to be supplanted by the Jewish communist-created morality of anti-racism and fake equality. As mentioned, anti-racism is necessarily anti-white, because any attempt to socially deny the critical importance of race and to promote a false racial equality which does not exist in the real world implicitly undermines any capacity to socially recognize the superior attributes of whites upon which our civilization depends. These superior attributes are what give rise to the white man's superior societal and civilizational results. Anti-racist always means anti-white in all practical applications. So from my perspective, there is only one solution, and that is to fearlessly work to rehabilitate the concept of racism. This is the word and this is the concept that has been handed to us. However, it is possible to capture this word for ourselves and turn the meaning positive, the way it should be. Racism is merely a completely natural affinity for your own kind, your extended biological family, combined with common sense observation that the races are very different in the ways that matter for advanced civilization. The problem is not racism, it is integration with problem races. While there is nothing wrong with racism, the anti-racist worldview is divorced from reality, ruinous to the social order, and literally dangerous, as in integrating with inferior non-whites gets our societal standards trashed, our cities ruined, freedoms of association and speech taken away, and our people abused and murdered. Anti-racism is a trap for weak-minded people with a mentally and emotionally childish worldview, who may be overly sympathetic to pathetic figures, such as the blacks and the browns of this world. And anti-racism is a creation of our racial enemies, the Jews, which has cost us dearly in blood. Absolutely no respect should be given to the anti-racist worldview. We can no longer afford to suffer anti-racist fools gladly or at all. Loyal white racists must fight the anti-racists for dominance in our society. Where we are now, it is either us or them. So thanks again, Bill, for that segment. Now let's hear from one of our most eloquent comrades in Europe, the Count of Lettice. The Count sent us a lengthy piece a few weeks back, incorporating his own selection of white folk songs, which we decided to run as a standalone RFN special. In this segment, the Count has another musical selection for us, and talks about some ways to improve ourselves, to effectively resist the enemy's plans for us, and prepare to do what must be done.
I want to talk about the changes that could help you to eventually become the person, as Harold used to say, that our ancestors would recognize. I share this, which is partly based on my own personal experience, out of a sense of honest, constructive motivation. My life has definitely been transformed after I decided to answer the call and work my way towards my migration to the homeland. Now, I am not quite there yet, but the changes are visible in my mental, spiritual, and physical health. First piece of advice I would like to offer you is to ditch out all the things you know are not good for you. Here I want to include any form of entertainment, distractions that do not really provide any positive recovery after the stress of a normal working day. You can add here whatever it is that you know is not for the benefit of your own well-being, and thus not for the benefit of our race. For example, any type of entertainment that you usually recognize has been infiltrated by cultural Marxism. Stop watching Netflix, for example, or stop going to the movies. Stop giving money to the Jews. Instead, save that money and use it to plan and organize your scouting trip. Also, try to invest that money in healthier food. This ties into the second piece of advice I would like to offer, which is clean your diet. you know most likely what is good and what isn't for your body. Don't you want to live long enough to see the Northwest American Republic come into existence? Get into the habit of preparing your own food from fresh ingredients. Believe it or not, even if you spend a bit more money in good quality, say, for example, meat or a pack of fresh vegetables, this will still be cheaper than if you would eat takeaways or buy prepared food from most or any establishment for that matter. The time you would typically use to watch Netflix or any of these movies that are now being shown in theaters, you could use that time to prepare and plan for your meals ahead. Eat enough high quality protein, high quality fats, and just enough carbs. Next piece of advice is to start working out. No excuses for this. I definitely recommend getting into the habit of weightlifting. It will instill you with a sense of discipline in every aspect of your life. Think about it. When the time comes that you must act for the benefit of your race, you would want to do so with strength, health, and determination. I would recommend finding a workout plan and execute accordingly. This avoids any distractions in the gym and also makes a more efficient use of your time. This again ties into the next piece of advice. Learn something new as often as you can. Have you always wanted to learn how to program? Well, just go for it. There are plenty of instructional videos online. There are plenty of online material you could use. Learn a language, for example. Keeping your brain active is absolutely essential to prevent cognitive deterioration. Again, your race needs you healthy, strong, and smart. Why do you think much of what is happening is due to a lack of sense of discipline, a lack of a sound mind, and a strong body? Last piece of advice, take up new challenges. For example, I have never recorded myself, let alone do any audio editing. When I became a frequent listener of Radio Free Northwest, I thought to myself how I would wish to talk about useful aspects of my life, share experiences to this honorable audience. Here I am, trying something new, learning how to do so and keeping myself busy. We can essentially fall into the trap after becoming red-pilled or what would translate to racially aware of the ongoing white genocide to just listen to people ranting on the internet, and we could usually become bitter and pessimistic about it. Let these current events fuel your internal fire. May that fire of life burn bright again. And in doing so, your life will transform, you will transform, and you will push others to do the same into people recognizable by our ancestors.
Let's talk a bit now about propaganda and rhetoric. Propaganda and rhetoric are high forms of the linguistic arts. And in these, as in all forms of art, the creative process is often greatly enhanced by collaboration. This is why even highly accomplished and successful authors will co-write books with other authors and share credit for the finished work. It's why musicians routinely perform duets and co-write songs and orchestrate music with other musical artists. We hear routinely that our efforts on RFN inspire you and that you appreciate what we produce here. However, when we are receiving contributions from you, we are similarly inspired by your efforts. Our own creative wells are refilled listening to what you have to say. I have had my interest renewed in several things and been directed into new avenues of research by these new submissions we've received just since the last RFN in which we renewed our call for them. Fundamentally, RFN is a conversation with all of our people. It's for all of our people. The show is mirrored on external sites. Excerpts from the show are included in multiple blogs and on pro-white bulletin boards across the net. Each of us has insights and a contribution to make, and through RFN there is no limit to how far your contribution might go, into whose ears it can fall, or how many of our people it might help awaken and inspire to action. So your contributions to RFN are every bit as important as ours are. You have life experience and knowledge that you can share with our folk. You have things to say on race, civilization, society, history, racial psychology, and white survival. So say them here on RFN. If you don't want to bother editing your submissions into a polished final product, that's fine. Don't worry about it, and don't let that hold you back. Send us your raw segments. Editing is nothing to us. We're old hands at it now, and if you need us to, we will take care of that. What we can't take care of is the original generation of what you have to offer your people. We are entirely dependent on you getting that out of yourself. Overcoming any reluctance in this area will be good training. In order to survive, in the future, whites will have to overcome our reluctance to a great many things. So be courageous, resilient, and make the effort to be heard. Download the Audacity recording and audio editing software, which is free on the net. Get a USB condenser microphone and rock and roll. 3 minutes, 5 minutes, or longer segments, whatever you can manage, lend your voice to the cause. Whatever audio format you send, we can convert it without a problem, but MP3 format is easiest. We want your voice, and your fellow whites need your contribution. Send your audio to the party's email, nwnet@earthlink.net. There is a lot to be said for the life strategy of speaking things into existence. The enemy did precisely that with their goals and their aims to bring us where we are today. We can do the same to help get us back to where we need to be tomorrow. More white voices mean more white power.
Radio Free Northwest is brought to you by the Northwest Front, P.O. Box 2188, Bremerton, Washington, 98310. You can visit the party on our website at www.northwestfront.org. Until next time, hail victory.
Oh, what glorious pride of sorrow filled the name of 98. Yet, thank God, it still is beating heart in my heart's burning new.